Welcome to the New World Order Disorder, a weekly broadcast hosted by Dr. Gianni Hayes. Stay tuned. Things are about to get interesting.
Good evening, listeners. This is Dr. Gianni Hayes with my show, The New World Order Disorder, on the American Voice Radio Network, one of the largest networks around with the best guests and some of the finest hosts. And you can hear us all over the world, and you can hear us on iPods. You can download us on cell phones. And, of course, we're on AM and FM stations across the United States, as well as on shortwave. And there are a variety of other ways that you can hear this show. There's no reason that you should miss this show, because it's set up on every possible venue to hear us. And, of course, you can go to the Internet, and we're on satellite and KU band and all those other wonderful things. Well, I want to thank the Patriots for always supporting our show. And I want to remind you that it is January 5th. We're already in January, and thankfully the days are starting to get a little bit longer. And, you know, you could go to the chat room. This is another way you can easily get involved with this particular show in all of Frank's network. Is if you go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com, on the left-hand side, when the front page comes up, you'll see where it says chat. All you have to do is click on chat. When you click on chat, a browser comes up. It asks for a username and a password. You don't even have to put in your real name or real password. You can put in anything you want, but then you'll be in a chat room, and you're going to join the other people in the chat room. And as the night goes on, we get a lot of people. We have Frank in there right now, and myself, and we have Hazmat and Kate and Melissa Roxanne, who, by the way, is helps Frank a lot, and we thank her for that. We have Wes, and, you know, just come in and join us. And if you have a question, I try to read the chat room questions so that I can ask them, and most of the times I do, but I also try to read the email that comes in with questions for the guests as well. So I'm just telling you, that's another way you can get involved. And if you cannot listen to us in all those different ways I told you, here's a neat thing that Frank has set up. It's called the phone bridge. And you dial this number. Now, it is not toll-free, but you can dial this number, 218-862-7200. That's 218-862-7200. An automated voice will come on and will ask you for the code. And all you have to do is punch in on where the keys are, 361113. That's 361113, 361113. And suddenly you will hear this show. And if you have a speakerphone button on your speakerphone, hit that, and it'll be just like you're listening to the radio station. You can also call in. Not only can you go to the chat room and all the different ways that I said, but you can call in and you could talk to my guest and me on this number. It's toll-free. You don't even pay for it. Frank does. It's 1-800-596-8191, 1-800-596-8191. And I hope that all of you go to my website at Gianni. Well, let's do it this way, creative-services.biz, and from there you can jump off to my books and other places. That's creative, with a little hyphen, services.biz, B-I-Z. And some of you say, well, Gianni, why don't you ever talk about your background? Well, I want to spend it on my guests, but let me just give you a brief overview for those of you who've asked. I'm the author of 19 published books. I have two masters and a bachelor's in science, particularly science research, bioresearch, biochemical research. And I have a PhD in world studies and humanities and in Bible prophecy. And, you know, I have a husband and two wonderful daughters who have given me just recently babies, baby grandchildren. And I love that. I'm a college professor. I work with doctoral students, and I speak all over the world. And as you know, not too long ago in October, I was speaking in Greece and Venice and throughout Greece, actually, Turkey and Croatia. So I always take the American Voice Radio with me, and I tell everybody, you know, tune into this radio show. It's one of the best. And speaking of which, Frank sells on the stores on his front page of AmericanVoiceRadio.com, wave shields. So if you click on Superstore, you go to Wave Shield. Now, why is that important to you? Well, every week, those of you who listen to me endlessly and have for, what, 6 or 7 years now, know that this is important to me. And it's important because you can prevent cell phone radiation going to your ears. And lots of studies have come out on this, some older studies, more new studies have come out, and it shows that there is an inherent danger in the microwaves from cell phones. And specialists and scientists have said for every minute that you are on a cell phone is equivalent to one radiation. Well, Frank sells a wave shield, and a wave shield is just a tiny little piece of, I guess it's like not even, maybe plastic of some type, and it goes right over the ear part of the phone. Now, what that does, it blocks 99% of the radiation going into the soft tissue of the ear, which then goes into the brain. And I always tell you, week after week, I've had a woman on my radio show about 2 years ago, I believe, who had 7 brain tumors. And the doctors who removed those brain tumors, and thank goodness they were all benign, but what she went through was just a horror, said that they could date the time of the first brain tumor around the time that cell phones came out. And she used her cell phone a lot because of her business. So, you know, if you don't believe a lot of the studies out there, take that as one of the things you should certainly consider. That's pretty important. Okay, so we're trying to get through the business here before I interview my guest. The last comment I want to make is please go to www.talkstreamlive, www.talkstreamlive. Now, why is this so important? Well, TalkStream Live does something that is kind of neat, and what it does is the more people who click on the host name, the more, the higher the host show rises on TalkStream Live's scale. Well, the important part of that, though, is this, is if you are clicking on my name and you get me up to the top, and you usually do, you usually put me in first place, then what happens is the streams go out to more listeners so that more people end up hearing what my guests have to say. Than if you didn't click on TalkStream Live. And look, it only takes a minute. You just go to www.talkstreamlive.com, click on my name, and you could do it every hour and help me rise in the ratings. And the wonderful people in the chat room always support us in doing that, but you listeners help too, so please do that. That is very important. All right, let me tell you about my guest tonight. One guest, you know, he's on my show all the time, and that's John DiNardo. And, you know, this is an appropriate time to have him on because we're going to talk about not only Planet X and the geological aspects of the Earth, but what in the world is going on with the dead birds and the dead fish. So we are definitely going to talk about that. And, you know, as I said, he's been on my show many, many times, and you know, John has this knowledge as a physics teacher of how the Earth comes together, and he earned his degree in science education from Keene University with electives in physics and biology, and he taught high school physics before returning to an electronics career during his 4.5 years in the Marine Corps. He graduated from the Naval Air Technical Training Center in Memphis. And that was as a scholastic honor man in the Aviation Electronics Technician School. He also completed evening college courses in electrical engineer and in advanced mathematics on differential equations. And this was at Farley Dickinson University. He performed troubleshooting and fault analysis and design of electronic circuitry. And he worked for numerous corporations, including Bendix Avionics and Dynalco in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and with McGraw-Edison Corporation, as well as Industrial Timer Corporation. Those are both in New Jersey. And he did additional studies as well in electronics. And it gave him a very diverse experience with the principles and analysis of electronic circuitry and advanced design, analog and digital electronic circuits. Now, having said all that, to many of you, sounds a little complicated, but you'll see how much John knows when he starts talking. Now, joining John is a new gentleman that I just learned about, and John suggested that I do put him on. And I'm glad he did, because he is going to add to this conversation and make this an even wider discussion. And I want all of you to get involved in this discussion. And this is Dr. Jason Rand, who earned an honorary PhD in the field of energy informative sciences from the Academy of Energy Informative Sciences, which was conducted with Moscow University. That is in Russia, as you know. His contributions in the study and a pursuit of all extraterrestrial communications, research into UFO phenomena, and we talk about that on this show, cosmology, and his representing the United States at the first World UFO Congress that was in Tucson, Arizona, in 1991. And this all earned him distinctive recognition in his honorary doctorate from their Russian Academy of Sciences in Moscow. Jason Rand also attended the University of Illinois, Palmer School of Business, the National College of Chiropractic, and earned three U.S. Army school diplomas from 1963 to 1966. He's also a gold/platinum, multi-award winning music producer, recording artist, songwriter, publisher, and recording studio manager, being a music A&R executive with real hands-on corporate industry experience. Now, isn't that something? You have somebody who has this kind of knowledge that he does, and he has this other side of the brain that is the art side of music. Rand received significant industry recognition from RIAA, NARAS, NATRA, Billboard, Record World, Cashbox Magazine, Reader's Digest, and so on. And he's also been honored by 60 Minutes TV Disco Dance Special in a 3 Dick Clark LA Music Award nominations, earning him, now get this, 35 gold and platinum records. And he lives in Mississippi. So having these two gentlemen will be an enlightening night, and I want to welcome you both.
Thank you. Hi, Gianni. I'm pleased to be with you and your audience.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Hayes, and good evening to your great staff, too.
Well, they are great staff, and, you know, Jason, you can ask John this. In spite of the fact of having 4 degrees with a doctorate, I prefer that you call me Gianni.
Okay,
I make my
Gianni.
Doctoral students call me doctor, but you're a friend, so just call me Gianni.
Thank you very much, Gianni.
All right. Now, gentlemen, we know, boy, there's a lot of stuff going around right now about earthquakes and, of course, Planet X. And I know I printed out all the articles that have arisen on Planet X and on the birds. So who would like to start first with their comments?
Well, I'd like to first give a brief introduction as to
and
the...
And this is John, listener, so you can...
Yeah. Okay.
I know your voice, but I'm not so sure they do. So go ahead, John.
I'd like to give a brief introduction as to the description of Planet X and the credentials of the people who claim that it exists, and that it these credentials come from the National Aeronautics and Space Administration way back in 1983, and it was published officially in the New York Times. I have the actual article in front of me from January 30th, 1983, New York Times, I'd like to quote just a little bit from it to show you that this is what the NASA officials were putting out from the U.S. government before they were told to suppress all of this information. The article is titled, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations, etc. I'm going to skip over this a little bit. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in the trajectories of these two spacecraft provide clues to the source of the mysterious force. And they were hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched last week will detect heat signatures from the planet or whatever is out there. Well, I'm going to... That's so much for that article. For the
What was the date on that, John?
This was January 30th, 1983. I photocopied the actual New York Times article from the microfilm archives at my county library, and I distributed this article, a picture of it, to many Planet X researchers on the Internet. Now, NASA goes on in this article to state that they believe that more credence is given to the hypothesis that a brown dwarf star accounts for this mysterious force. So they're saying what has been called Planet X for many, many years, in fact, two centuries, is they believe, or government officials believed at that time, that it is a brown dwarf star. And this, I'm reading onward, this is the informal name that astronomers give to celestial bodies that were not massive enough for their thermonuclear furnaces to ignite. Perhaps like the huge planet Jupiter, they just missed being self-illuminating stars. So there you go. There is the government of the United States claiming that they believe it's a brown dwarf star. Now, by definition, a brown dwarf star is a very tiny baby sun. It never got drew enough particles in its gravitational field inward to collapse inward into a large enough, more dense enough, compressed, hot enough mass to actually ignite into thermonuclear fusion. And thus it's like an incipient flame that never really got hot. However, by definition, a brown dwarf star, even the puniest brown dwarf star, is at least three Jupiter masses. Now, one Jupiter mass is 318 Earth masses. So the puniest brown dwarf star then would be approaching 1,000 Earth masses. This thing is believed by today, now that we've got more information on it after it has traveled that much further closer to us since the 1983 report has been issued, is believed to be somewhat bigger than three Jupiter masses. So we're talking about something that's greater than 1,000 Earth masses. We all know that gravitational force of attraction is directly proportional to the mass of the two bodies attracting one another. In this case, the two bodies are Planet X, about at least 1,000 Earth masses, and our Sun, which is 1/3 of a million Earth masses. Our Sun is defined as having a mass about 330,000 Earth masses. So the Sun is drawing this object in. You know, it's really understandable. It's quite understandable that objects from deep space would be pulled in by our Sun. And that's exactly what is happening.
Okay, so then looking at that, Jason, what is the danger of Planet X? So we can set up this whole idea of the earthquakes and then the dead birds and everything else going on. So maybe you can give us some insight as to what John just said. Why should we be concerned about that? I know you wrote a book. I didn't get a copy of that.
I will get you one, I promise. We just didn't have time.
Well, that's all right. I'm going to have you back on. But,
all right.
You know, Jason, you did a nice job on your website, and I want both of you to talk about your website and especially tell us about your book.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw in there was that you were able to say, this is what appears to be coming. This is how it's going to affect us in 2009. This is how it's going to affect us in 2010 and so on. So if you want to comment on what John said and mention your site in your book, let's do that as a get ready go.
All right. Let's just drop into the picture there. It's real simple. The reason we wrote the book, The Return of Planet X, is because all my life I have been led to write, research, and develop a source of information trying to solve this mystery pattern. You see, the real story begins when I'm a child nearly in utero because I have an ET aspect to my life, you see. So for me to try to jump into it is like saying, okay, look, I buckle up your, you know, okay, everybody, let's have some fun. If you're sitting there in a home chair, buckle up your belt because I'm going to take you on a ride tonight. First of all, I want to comment and thank John for suggesting to you to bring me on. I'm very humbled to be here, and I want everyone to know that when I speak to you like I am through your host and my co-host John, is that we are just real people with real information which we've all believed to be true, well-researched. We all have, I believe, credentials to talk about it, you know, to express our feelings and to share the information. So I'm very comfortable in addressing you and your audience tonight. And I may say something that may go a little beyond what you may think is real or right, but it'll be just, okay?
All right.
Okay. Now, let's try to plunge somewhere near the beginning of the reality of what Planet X really is. Let's do that first, okay, everybody? Let's as John did, let's get to the core of what Planet X is. And he gave us an exact history. Okay. Let us assume that we zoom back in time to about 4.5 to 5 billion years ago, when this present solar system was either being formed or was being tuned up. You know, you don't put a solar system as complex as the one we live in. For instance, can you imagine what kind of a computer file it took was necessary to launch the creation of this solar system? If you know anything about our solar system in relation to the galactic plane, and then to what we call the majesty of stars in our Milky Way galaxy, you see, where do you begin to understand how complex and how perfect, and that the universe as a piece, as a unit, as an entity, as a consciousness, as a God-created element, controls everything that's going on. It's controlling, believe it or not, tonight, even these conversations. Because should a tornado rip through here, suddenly I'm not talking to anybody anymore. And that's how temporary a life we're living right now. Our planet is under siege from an incoming celestial planetary body, which most likely is a brown dwarf star, and I'll tell you in just a minute, and I'll try to do that story fast. Where did it come from? How could it be? How does it? Why does it come back? Why do you call it the return of Planet X? So there's where I'd like to really begin to tell my story, and it'll be about the history as my understanding reads it through about 7.5 years of research. I probably read 2,000 books. At one time, on my living room wall, I had 2,400 3x5 cards, and they were constantly...
All right, hey, Jason, keep that in mind. You know, we got to do station ID,
okay.
So we'll be right back and pick up there. Listeners, stay tuned and go to TalkStreamLive.com. All right, listeners, we're back, and my guests, as I mentioned about a half hour ago when we started, are John DiNardo and Dr. Jason Rand. And we are talking about Planet X, and we're going to talk about earthquakes. And we're going to talk about this phenomena where we are finding dead birds just dropping from the sky in various places, as well as dead fish. And right before we went to break, Jason started to give us some background. And, you know, we have less than an hour and a half. We have a lot of things to cover, but you're welcome to call in at 1-800-596-8191 and talk to us, or you can leave a message in the chat room, and I'll try to get to that as well. So, Jason, I'm going to give it back to you to kind of wrap that up, so we'll go ahead and move on then.
Imagine the complexity of this solar system. Here's basically what's happening. I'm going to go back to the Sitchin concept, the theory that there were 12 planets in the solar system. I'm going to begin there because I accept this from Sitchin. I believe, as he said, that there were, in fact, 12 planets, not the 8.5 that we presently have. And back then, there was no asteroid belt. It hadn't been created yet. And there were, in fact, three suns designated to this system, this star system. Our sun, a small baby sun, and I'm giving you a clue there, small baby sun, small brown dwarf, and a far distant dark blue power star set up in the form of like a complex triangular pattern. It's cosmologically important to understand that there were three suns. Full sun that we have, a dark distant partner sun way out beyond the solar system, which keeps everything in balance, and then this little baby sun, which eventually became what we now call Planet X. Here's why. There were three suns. The little baby sun, about the size of at least Saturn or larger. That's why they say that it's 6 times, 10 times, 12 times the mass of Earth. Okay? This little baby sun was happily going about its business, circling around the sun. By the way, all the planets, all the suns, all the objects, even the asteroid belt, everything rotates in a counterclockwise motion. That is extremely important to the story and the understanding of the celestial dynamics taking place in our solar system. Not only do all the planets and objects in our solar system rotate counterclockwise, but so do all the other suns and all their systems. All of it is in one huge circle. So when you look down on the plane of the ecliptic of our Milky Way galaxy, it looks like big spiral arms that are rotating in a counterclockwise motion, because that is the dynamic which drives the entire our sector of the universe called the Milky Way galaxy. By the way, there are probably 100 million more galaxies. That is a fact. Astronomers believe 100 million additional galaxies like ours or larger. Just think about that for a moment. Now, what about the baby sun? What happened was 4.5-5 billion years ago, 12 planets flying around, no asteroid belt, everything's pretty much under control. Life probably was destined for at least, they believe that life was probably destined for at least 3 or 4 of the planets in our solar system, which would include Mars and Venus and possibly even Mercury to some form or another, because we believe that Mercury was going to have played some role in nourishing one of the other small planets. Now, big, terrible monster rock comes careening out of the void of deep space, falling as if it were through the plane of the ecliptic. Now, this object was probably headed toward our solar system, which is rotating in a counterclockwise motion. It was hurling at it in a clockwise trajectory and motion. You see? Like two express trains coming at each other. Can you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The devastation would be horrendous. Well, what happened was, it did come careening through. It smashed into some of the outer planets. One of them, according to Sitchin and other scholars and research, was called Marduk. Large, rocky planet. Not, you know, it was just hot, molten stuff that was just fuzzing. It just, nothing ever happened with it. It was just a piece of rock. It was hit first, bursting it into a billion, trillion pieces, which eventually became the asteroid belt. And the collision probably occurred between Mars and Jupiter, because that's where the asteroid belt is. So it kind of makes sense that if the collision happened near that point, and there was this huge diffusion of a planet into trillions and billions of pieces of in the asteroid belt, then what happened to the rest of the pieces? One piece flew and hit the Earth, probably cracking Pangaea, the back of Pangaea, because at that point back in time, there was only one gigantic landmass on Earth called Pangaea. Another piece.
Okay, so I think we're going to have to kind of fast forward here, Jason, only because we've got so much to talk about. And a lot of this stuff, you know inside and out, and John knows inside and out, but my listeners, like, don't know it as well as you do, and they want to get to the heart of the matter and get to the meat and understand what my focus of the show is about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. A collision occurred. Big piece hit the sun, the little baby sun, knocked it out into a long, thin elliptical orbit heading between our Earth, away from our Earth, around the sun, back out into space, and it revisits this dark blue-black power star and comes hurtly back and forth about every 36 to 4,000 years. And that baby sun, that object, that is the thing that we call Planet X. That is the brown dwarf star that everyone's talking about. And therefore, when you start finding biblical portions and prophecies, which I know John will probably speak about, we begin to understand that this is a very real phenomenon that's taking place right now as we speak on the air tonight. John?
All right. That was good. That was good. It gave us a good background. Now, my understanding, John and Jason, is that as this brown dwarf nears our orbit, and you had this great picture on your website, Jason, of where the Earth was in relationship to the sun and the other planets and where Planet X was coming in. So let's go with you first, John, and of course, Jason, you can jump in at any time. We're not formal here. What are some of the signs we have already begun to see and what is coming? And I know a lot of it has to do with geological disasters. So, John, you start that. Jason, jump in anytime you want.
Mm-hmm. Well, in 2004, I began videotaping nothing but severe weather reports from the Weather Channel, and I've collected about 250 hours of Weather Channel severe weather reports, and these are just amazing when you look at all of them. I could never have time to actually display all of these videos, but we've got severe weather, for example, floods, historic, epic, record-breaking floods that have occurred over and over again in many parts of the United States, in
like
Texas,
Australia,
Louisville,
well,
Kentucky,
right?
And in the Baltimore area, Washington State. I'm sorry, go ahead, say that.
No, I said like they showed on a video of Australia where they said that there was flooding the size of the state of Texas, and it was mind-blowing where the water was up to the roofs of the homes.
Yes, I mean, these are epic floods that have never been seen in this magnitude before in our modern history. And I've got videotapes of Poland. In Poland, cities, towns have become raging rivers. Germany, in Portugal, in Spain, all over the world, this is happening. We've had also the opposite of flooding. We've had severe droughts. We've had heat waves in Russia that were killing many, many thousands. We have had forest fires resultant from these heat waves. We have hailstorms with hailstones that are exceeding the size of anything ever recorded. I've got numerous reports, countless reports, videotaped from the Weather Channel of hailstones the size of baseballs and very often the size of softballs and grapefruit, which I can... If I had the time to put together, I could present to you, I could show you this actual footage, grapefruit-sized hailstones. We have snow, for example, in a town called Niigata, Japan, last year or 2 years ago. They had 262 inches of snow. They had show footage on the Weather Channel of China where people's houses were totally inundated with snow. People were standing on the roofs of their houses shoveling snow. And it goes, today you can see the same thing on the Weather Channel. It goes on and on. We've had heat waves, that are just incredible. Florida, I mean, California right now has epic flooding, and I'm concerned that this flooding has been, some people have stated that this flooding is typical, a precursor sign of earthquakes. And I just hope this is not true, but we cannot depend upon hope. We have to help people to be alert to and teach them signs of detection so that they can detect these earthquakes in advance and hopefully save lives by fleeing when the signs become very, very conspicuous and very powerful.
Okay, so let's back up a minute then. The first thing you're saying, and I think Jason said this on his site as well, is we're going to see a change in the weather. That started in your eyes regarding Planet X when?
Well, actually, it probably started before I even began documenting it in 2004, but I have the actual documentation going back to 2004. In fact, I began a radio program as a result of that called Planet X and Bible Prophecy. And even before 2004, we have records of earthquake activity increasing significantly throughout the 1990s, and it's continually getting worse. And another sign of tremendous seismic activity is the fact that our government has blatantly, criminally falsified their scale of earthquake measurement scales so as to make it look like earthquakes are milder than they actually are. For example, they have reduced the magnitude of their measurement scale by one-tenth of what it should be.
So when
an earthquake occurs, they're saying, oh, it's 10 times milder than it really is.
Okay, so give me an example. It's something that's a 7.5 on the Richter scale. I know there's also the Japanese scale, but most people are familiar with the Richter scale. So what then, if it was really 7.5, what are they telling the nation then, or the public?
Well, they're telling the people that it's 6.5. Every time you go one full digit, one full number up on the Richter scale, say from 6.0 to 7.0, that one full number represents an increase of 10 times in magnitude, 10 times greater. So it's like if the government were to tell you that we've suddenly made a dollar equal to a dime. So, you know, it's just criminal, because now people don't understand how severe the conditions are and how much of a threat there is, and therefore people are not in a position to protect themselves. They've also changed the scale to the modified Mercalli scale, which is really a joke. They've gone from the falsified Richter scale to the modified Mercalli scale, which is an insult to anybody's intelligence. What it says is, well, if the furniture moves a certain amount and vibrates in your house, we'll call it a 6.0. Or if you have a ground shaking, or if your building shakes a little bit, we'll call it a 6.5. Well, what happens if the earthquake is not in a populated area? Then, by their standards, it never existed. So it's just crazy. You don't measure an earthquake by how much your furniture moves. Everybody's floor is different. You have to use a scientific scale such as the original Richter scale that measured the actual vibrations in the earth. This is another example.
Okay, but John, let me back up. So you're saying that they're not giving us the truthful degree and magnitude of the earthquakes so as not to frighten us, even
exactly.
Though they know?
Exactly. It's like the Kennedy assassination. It's like President Nixon once said, it's not the crime that gets you, it's the cover-up. So you it's really
Jason.
A lie when they start covering it up.
All right, Jason, do you agree with that? And do you think that the earthquakes that we have been seeing, especially, say, in the last year and a half, have been increasing, as John is saying, and that they are a sign of the nearing of Planet X?
Absolutely. Every single fact that John talked about is absolutely true. It can be verified. Like he said, don't take our word. You can go check out the information yourself. There's no question that we are headed toward a pretty bad series of events. Let me give you my prognosis. I hope I'm wrong, everybody. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that everything goes just great all the way through 2012. You know, December 21st, 2012 comes, everything is great. If not, I think that by the fall of 2011, the weather will have gotten, we will have a terrible, terrible hurricane season, you know, the storms. In other words, it'll peak. It should peak going into 2012. Okay, that 5 to 6 month peak. That's when everything drops out. Now, if we get through that with minimum damage or no shaking or whatever, I will be the first to say, if we don't, we can expect a very bad fall coming up in 2011. And you know what that means. We're going into an election in 2012. That's not good to have the nation potentially in the grip of some natural disaster. I hope not. Now, we have to calculate three things. Mother Nature is totally unpredictable in terms of Mother Nature as we know her, all the storms and tornadoes and earthquakes. All that is supposed to be Mother Nature. Actually, it's planet Earth that we're dealing with. Now, if everything continues to escalate, I don't have to make the prediction. The prediction speaks for itself. It's going to get rough. That's why we need to be prepared. We need to listen to shows like yours and other shows that try to give us a heads up as to what's coming. I believe we are very near that tipping point, whether this is going to be a really bad trip through this Planet X world or not. You see, it's not always bad. There are a lot of factors and dynamics that control how bad this Planet X passing could be. That's another reason we wrote the book. We tracked it back 350,000 years. The last time we believe that this phenomenon came through here was in 1447 BCE, which happens to correspond with about the year they believe that Moses was leading the Israelites out of Egypt. Now, if that is true, and as it did for me, it started to unlock a lot of whole lot of other factors that told me that biblically, and I know John knows a lot about this aspect, biblically, it's all over the page. You can go chapter to chapter. I found something. I hate to digress for a second. I found something in Genesis, chapter 1. Just write this down. Genesis, chapter 1, 16. I'll do it real fast. It's talking about God creating lights in the firmament. And God made two great lights. The greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. Now, everybody thinks that means the entire universe above us and the entire thing. No, it doesn't say the firmament. It says he made the stars also. So that's plural. So there got to be at least two stars. Now, later on, I'll not tonight, next show, we'll track where they talk about the three stars that were created in this system. Now, if all this stuff is true, then maybe it is coming back. Maybe this is what the Mayans call the end of cosmic time. By the way, they didn't say that the Earth was going to end. They said that the Earth was going to go through a great awakening and a great shaking. That's what they
said. Yeah, and I want to talk about that because that happens to be my belief. But let's go back here to John's comments on, and John, please, you know, jump in, John. You know that. You've been on with other guests I've had on, and you know how to dialogue with all of us. If we're going to see more earthquakes, and we've seen an unprecedented amount, actually, like in squalls, you know, it's not just one isolated here, one isolated there. They seem to be on a run in all over the globe. If this is happening, then my understanding, and I'm tying this in with the effect on living things, my understanding, I think, John, this was your article, I don't remember if it was somebody else's, had said that in Arkansas especially, there is quartz under the mantle of the earth, and therefore there also happens to be a fault. So it's like when you light a lighter, you just click it, and there's an instant spark. But that these sparks, when the earthquake has come through, creates very high and very intense waves, and that these waves could have killed the birds. Well, people have said this to me in the last, I guess, 4 or 5 days, and asked me to talk about this on the show with you two gentlemen. Could it not be that their suggestions are the birds are dead for the following reasons, and everybody has their own input? One is that they were hit by lightning. These are not my views. I'm just sharing them with you. Two, there was a toxin in the air. Three, that they actually were birds bred by enemies who are carrying diseases and were intentionally put into this country to spread disease. Four was that they heard a loud noise, and this is what scared them, and they started to run into things. But when I've read the information on the autopsies of these birds, I've learned that these birds are not truly damaged other than from the blunt force of the impact. In other words, there wasn't any pathological reason organically for them to have died. And the other thing that I read was that these birds flew low, and they flew at night, and they don't generally fly at night, and they don't generally fly that low, but they were flying low. But the majority of them were up high. So the ones that were flying higher, when they fell, the impact was much greater, and they died. Whereas the birds that were flying much lower, I guess they still died, but the impact on them was less. However, they said the birds that were in the tree that were so instantaneously, I guess, knocked for a loop from whatever caused it, did not die because those birds did not fall to the ground. My belief is that I do think it has something to do with some type of chemical effect that may have come from the earth. So having said that, then, I'd like you gentlemen to weigh in on that so we can look at that and compare it to where we are with Planet X and then put this all together and say, what are we looking at for the coming years and where are we going in biblical prophecy?
Well, Gianni, I wrote that article today to which you refer regarding the impact on the tectonic plates below in the crust of the Earth. This is a theory that I have and has yet to be proved. But what happens when there is a disturbance of tectonic plates, which comprise the crust of the Earth, will clash together. When there is a disturbance that underneath, beneath that carpet, we'll call the crust of the Earth, like a carpet, several carpets that are all joined together adjacently. They're not connected physically, but they're touching one another. If you have a floor below the carpet that's made out of jello, and that jello starts to wobble and quiver, it's going to cause the carpets to clash against the edges of one another. Or better yet, it's like someone carrying a tray of pineapple slices on a bed of jello, and somebody jars the arm, the elbow of the person carrying the tray, that jello begins to wobble and quiver, and the pineapple slices butt up against one another. This is what happens to the Earth's 12 tectonic plates when the magma, that jello gelatinous-like magma, which is molten rock beneath the crust of the Earth, begins to vibrate and quiver. When the clashing occurs between these two hard rocky crustal plates, there is a phenomenon called the piezoelectric effect. And this is, I've known about this in electronics for many years. It's been applied to various electronic circuit designs in your stove, your gas range, your grill, gas grill, and your cigarette lighters all use the principle of the piezoelectric effect, whereby a hammer, a small hammer, impacts a crystal, and the result is a very high voltage in the order of thousands of volts for a very short time, a fraction of a second. And when that high voltage occurs, it is allowed to jump across a spark gap, like the spark plug in the old types of cars. And that spark would jump across and ignite the gas. Well, that same kind of phenomenon occurs on a macro level, very colossal level, under the ground when tectonic plates clash together and they have a piezo voltage that's created probably in the order of tens of thousands of volts, and the arcs and sparks occur under the ground across that narrow margin of clashing plates or clashing rock formations.
And what does it result in, though, John?
When the voltage occurs, whenever, this is another very well-known phenomenon of electricity and magnetism, and that is when electrons are in motion, they generate around them, concentrically around them, a ballooning, billowing electromagnetic field that billows outward. Visualize cars going through a tunnel, for example. Those cars might represent the electrons in motion in a straight line. And the inner walls of the tunnel would represent the billowing outward coil-like electromagnetic field that is generated by the stream of electrons or the stream of cars. So you can see that underground, this billowing ballooning electromagnetic field actually cuts right through solid matter. It goes, you know, like a ghost. It cuts through solid matter, goes right up through the ground into the air, and now you have a very high altitude, very extremely powerful electromagnetic field that is instant, occurs for a fraction of a second.
John, I think I got
that
your answer.
That field is going to zap living creatures, because if you're made with water, if you had water in you like everyone does, it's going to cause the body to conduct the electromagnetic
okay,
field.
Okay, now hold that thought, yeah. John. Jason, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think I've got John's mystery force possibly identified here.
Okay, on that note, we're going to go to station ID, and when we come back, Jason, it'll be you addressing John. Stay tuned, listeners, at TalkStreamLive.com, please, and rate us. All right, listeners, we are back, and we certainly want to continue with the show because we have lots to talk about. And as a reminder, I have John DiNardo on and Jason Rand on, and we're talking about not only Planet X, which we've covered many times on my show, but we're including what the devastating effects are of Planet X, and particularly the flooding and earthquakes. And now we're trying to figure out if the earthquakes have contributed to these birds falling out of the sky for apparently no reason that I guess you would call them bird morticians could pathologically come up with, and that fish are dying for no reason. Though to me, that's probably the oil thing that has so many toxins, not only in the fish but the people. But that's another story, and we may have time for that. But before we went to station ID, I did want to tell you that listeners, you know, I've been doing this show with Frank for 7 years or more, and you have all kept me on the air because you have sent in donations, and I do need a sponsor. And if you want me to stay on, I ask you to send the money to Frank. I don't make a penny off of this. This is my own personal ministry, and I'm not even asked to make a penny or I just want you to send Frank some money to help him pay his bills to keep my show on the air. So I hate saying that. I hate asking you to do that. But, you know, we can't expect Frank to operate this show in a void. He has his bills as well. All right, before we went to break, John had made a comment, and Jason said he thought he figured out the mystery. So, Jason, back to you.
Okay, I can't claim credit for what I'm about to say. In other words, it's not my own self-generated viewpoint. I've been getting a number of very interesting emails. By the way, I get hundreds and hundreds of emails from all over the world about all different things. And here's a couple ideas for you, John. Someone has suggested that the effect that happened to the birds and the fish and whatever sounds like this. And you're right on the money with these waves. It's an ultra-high-intensity, scalar-generated. the trick here is the scalar generated, some form of a laser beam type generated electromagnetic resonance wave. I know that sounds terribly complicated, but it's not. It's an ultra-high intensity, scalar generated, some form of a unification of electromagnetics and laser, something boom like that, and its mainframe is electromagnetic in nature, and it's a resonance wave, which means it probably affects the wave itself of whatever it's designed, and John can comment on that. It disrupts, it disorients, it can make you dizzy, make you pass out. That's how these birds maybe just, bam, down they went. They just fell. If you aim it toward the water, it will dull or kill anything in the water. Now, the question is, where'd they come from? Couple ideas. They could be generated by none other than the government testing something either innocently as a weapon or maybe trying to control or maybe taking sound readings in the earth. Whatever's causing this, it's probably man-made.
Well,
It's too technical not to be man-made.
Well, we see cases of these birds and birds dying and fish dying all over the world. We're seeing reports from Sweden, mm-hmm. from Italy, from South America, and where else? In China.
So it's not, just here.
Fish. Pardon me?
It's not just here.
Yes. Now, I certainly agree with you. The government has conducted these secret operations before, and they certainly do have weapons that are very much like what we see here, this phenomenon, weapons based upon electromagnetic energy being radiated at someone. However, in this case, I believe, again, it's just the theory, and I can only speculate based on some of the clues that we've gotten, and that is that these are happening all over the world, and I tend to believe that it's a natural phenomenon. Now, we do have a great threat of an earthquake in New Madrid area, which is the middle, lower Midwest of the United States, and this is what we have to be concerned about. If we say it's the government, then we tend to forget about the threat coming from the earthquakes, and then perhaps many millions of people will die because they were not forewarned. Let me give you some more evidence regarding the possible imminence of earthquakes in the Midwestern United States due to the New Madrid fault zone. Mm-hmm. One is a FEMA report that was sent to me by a very great, wonderful researcher, Nina, today, and she got it from FEMA, and it was published by FEMA just last month, where they were warning people, FEMA is warning the public, to be alert for earthquakes in the New Madrid zone, which is Arkansas, Missouri, that area, in the coming month or so. And so that was published in December. They're warning about earthquakes right now. Mm-hmm. There's a government warning. But, again, it was basically not very highly publicized. Secondly, here's some more information. I have a friend, Mark. He lives he's an acquaintance. He lives in northern New Jersey. He had told me now, I spoke to him by phone about 4 years ago, long before this Gulf of Mexico oil spill ever occurred. And he told me that he has a friend who is a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. And this was 4 years ago. He told me that his friend said that the people at the USGS, the U.S. government, expect land masses to arise out of the Gulf of Mexico.
Wait, just to arise out of the water?
Land masses to actually arise out of the deep, the seabed of the Gulf of Mexico, and this shocked me. Of course, I was not as shocked as other people would be, because I knew these were the expected effects of Planet X. I had been studying Planet X and what it causes, the kind of rising and sinking of land masses that are caused by this incredibly large gravitational pull from this passing body as close as 15 million miles as it passes by Earth on its way, on its gravitational rendezvous with the sun. 15 million miles seems like quite a distance away, but in cosmological terms, it's a near miss. So as it passes by, its gravitational, invisible, at a distance, hand sort of plucks at planet Earth's surface. It slows the Earth's rotation down, and it also plucks at the land masses and causes them to pull up in certain areas and to sink in other areas. Moreover, it's like an invisible hand of a bowler in slow motion. As he releases the bowling ball, he puts a spin on the ball. Well, that's what this planet does as it comes by. Again, 15 million miles away, its invisible gravitational hand will actually spin the Earth, cause it to topple. And this is prophesied by God in the book of Isaiah chapter 24 and Isaiah chapter 13, just like a bowler would put a spin on a ball. Now, what happens when the Earth spins? Well, think of the Earth as a big ball of jello. Again, we have a mostly molten iron core, and then we have surrounding that core about 1,800 miles deep a mantle. And think of the mantle as something like chocolate pudding. It's molten rock. And it's viscous, therefore, when the Earth rotates on its axis, it's going to bulge outward, just as if you had a water balloon and you spun that water balloon on a potter's wheel. What would happen? The water balloon would flatten out. It would no longer remain spherical, but it would stretch out at its equator, at its center, at the belly. And it would bulge outward. Well, that's the way our Earth is right now. And as long as it's kept in its rotation, in its even rotation, the land masses will remain at their proper altitude above and below the sea level.
However, when you tip the Earth, you're going to change. John, okay. Yeah. Let me interject because I have a couple questions that are coming in to me that I certainly want to ask. And listeners, if you want to talk to John and Jason, call 1-800-596-8191. It's toll-free, 1-800-596-8191. By the way, we're number one on TalkStream Live. We beat out Michael Savage again. John, you amazed me when you said that there was this landmass that would rise. Now, if we look at the history of, and if we happen to believe in Atlantis, the opposite happened, that supposedly it was sunken due to some catastrophic Earth disaster. So that kind of seems like it's the opposite. And the other question that has come in is this. What if, and I'm paraphrasing it, what if Planet X is a hoax by the government for a contrived implementation of a one-world government? So, John, I want you to answer the question about the elevated landmass. And, Jason, I'd like you to answer the question for the listener who wrote in and asked about a contrived Planet X. So, John, you go first, and then throw it over to Jason.
Historical records show that you have both. Some areas of the world will rise. Some land masses will rise. Others will sink. We have evidence of that in, as you say, with the sinking of Atlantis. They found cities that were above the sea level have now sunken below sea level. They're at the bottom of the ocean, around off of Cuba, off of the United States, many places, off the coast of Japan. And other areas, land masses were pulled upward. So this is what happens, and it's only logical. Basic physics will also show you that you're going to have a diversity of either increasing altitude of some land masses and decreasing altitude of other land masses. When you consider this Earth as a ball of jello that's spinning on its axis, all of a sudden it gets tipped over because, just like the bowler putting a spin on a bowling ball as he releases it, Earth begins to tip. So now the North Pole, what was the North Pole, shifts downward closer toward the equator, and what was the equator now is no longer at the center, and therefore that portion that was the equator might be, say, around the United States or Canada, and it doesn't have that large of diameter at that point, so therefore it's going to collapse, shrink a little bit. Its circumference of the Earth will shrink, and those land masses will consequently go below sea level. On the other hand, those areas that were become the new equator, begin to take on that bulge, that characteristic bulge that you have at the equator, and those land masses will arise above sea level. That's the answer to that question. You have both rising and sinking of land masses throughout the world.
Okay, we're going to come back to that, John, in a minute. But I want Jason now to tackle this question that is presented to me. And actually, it wasn't just one person who presented this. It was a couple and said, you know, we have this continuous threat of the New World Order coming in, a one world government. And, you know, I personally believe myself that the government will enforce a one world government through some contrived crisis. And that crisis may be a UFO invasion, it may be Planet X, it may be some other geological disaster, it may be that the money is totally gone and we need a world currency to become a one world. I don't know. But Jason, I would like you to kind of talk on that, because I know you do address that someplace on your website.
Yes, this is complex, but it's not impossible to understand.
Okay,
there's
and
no
before
question.
You do that, Ellen, Jason, before you do that, we do have a call, and I want to come back to you as soon as we're done with the caller.
Sure.
But we do want to get the caller in. So, caller, are you there, and what is your first name, and where are you calling from?
My name's Alan, and I'm calling from Canada, and I just have a quick question, and I'll listen off. I appreciate the program. I was just wondering if you could break down other places in Scripture, in the Bible, that Planet X may be mentioned or pointed to. Thank you.
I'll give you a quick one. Book of Revelation, chapter 8, verse 11. And the name of the star was Wormwood. If you read that chapter 8 of the Book of Revelation, all the way through from verse 1 to the end, you will get a complete, accurate description, timing of everything that's taking place right now, exactly what we can expect as this object, which is part of God's wrath, comes through and visits the earth every 36 to 4,000 years. You'll need, if you just read chapter 8 and those verses, you'll answer all your questions, sir.
I would agree with that, Jason, because I read the Bible every day. And, of course, when you study eschatology like I did, you have to certainly read Revelation and Daniel and Jeremiah and all of those. So that was a good answer. You're right. And maybe we can even dig deeper into that if we get time. But go ahead to the question about a contrived event.
Okay. It's easy to ascribe the word conspiracy to all of this. I mean, that's the easy thing. Oh, the government's got this huge conspiracy, MIBs and UFOs and ETs and secret programs and death camps and concentration camps and on and on and on and on and on and on. Stop. What we have to realize is all of it is as true as all of it is not necessarily totally true. The trick is the totally true. You see? There's no question there's going to be a one-world government. There is no question that they're trying to collapse our economy and our legal system. There's no question that we're headed pell-mell, smashing head-on into the New World Order, whether we like it or not. And it will probably be a Planet X type of tragedy. Listen, if we lose just one or two cities, do you realize that the president's the only thing stopping this country from coming to a complete halt under martial law is the stroke of a pen? Because the law has already been passed and signed into active use. Any sitting president can evoke martial law at his own discretion. There is no oversight, either federal or judicial, that could stop him. We are that close to being able to stop this society dead in its tracks. I cover that in Chapter 7 of our book, The Return of Planet X. Yes, it's all real. It's all serious. Yes, everybody should understand what's going on. You should get some supplies. What would you do if your city was suddenly without power or sewage or water or anything for 1 month? Can you imagine how awful it would be to live in your place, in your society, for 1 month without even running water? A major earthquake could do that, and it could do it to half the country, like the New Madrid scenario. I live less than 30 miles out of Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm probably about 36 miles from the Mississippi River, and I'm probably 200 280 feet above the surface of where my landmass is here. I'm not exactly sure I made the right decision about coming to live here. But I'm not going to worry because I believe I'll know when the time comes. The question is, do we believe all this stuff about Planet X? Is any of it real? Is all of it real? Yes, it is. Most of it's real. Not all of it's real. There's a lot of government misinformation. There are a lot of people talking out there who don't necessarily have their information and their facts totally correct. However, I believe that we are about 9 to 13 months away from a real serious collapse in our society in terms
On that note, we have another call, and I want to follow up with what you just said, Jason. I think it's very important. But, caller, what is your first name, and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is David from South Carolina.
Hello, David.
Hello, David.
Hey, great show. I'm so glad I called it. I missed about 30 minutes. But anyway, I was just curious about two things. Number one, there was a NASA physicist or a scientist that worked for NASA when it first came out, and they discovered Planet X, Anyway, this guy mysteriously passed away.
Are you referring to Dr. Harrington?
Yes, I can explain that to you. Dr. Robert S. Harrington, this is another very powerful piece of evidence to show that, indeed, this planet is coming in. This Planet X, according to this, as stated in this New York Times article, which I read to you at the beginning of the program, this Planet X has been sought for about 200 years by astronomers all over the world. And the reason they noticed it, they never had sighted it, but they have detected its effects, its gravitational pull on the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, ever since the 1800s, the early 1800s. So we're talking over 200 years. Scientists have been scrambling to try to find actually discover this planet. Because of its gravitational pull, it would perturb the outer planets at one particular point in their orbital rotation around the sun. And they knew there's only one way that this perturbation or plucking of the planets in their orbit could ever occur, and that would be by some unseen gravitational force. Any astronomer who would discover this planet would get the accolades of the entire scientific community. It would be the greatest find of astronomical history. And Dr. Robert S. Harrington was a noted, in fact, he was the chief astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. He had been searching for it. He had done intensive calculations to find out where it was. He found believed that it was coming in from below solar system's ecliptic plane, which is basically a turntable, like a record turntable or a CD turntable, on which an invisible disk in space on which all the planets revolve around the sun. So that is called the ecliptic, that turntable. Well, Dr. Harrington believed from his calculations that this planet was coming in straight up at an angle below this turntable, approaching the sun because it's gravitationally being pulled by the sun, at about a 40-degree angle to this ecliptic turntable in space. Dr. Harrington had actually sent a telescope down to the South Pole where it can be viewed, and he dispatched the telescope. The telescopic plates were returned to Washington, D.C., and just before Dr. Harrington had a chance to unveil this to the world, his discovery that the planet indeed was not only there where he believed it was, but it was actually approaching our solar system, Dr. Harrington mysteriously died of a fast-acting esophageal cancer in January of 1993. It's very suspicious. Many researchers believe he was murdered. It's clear that they do this all the time. If someone is going to release information that's highly disruptive of the power elite's economic system, their control over the people, they will murder that person. Just imagine, if the people were ever to become fearful of this planet coming in, they would lose all of their fear of the government because they would have a greater master to be fearful of, and that would be God. So
yes,
that's why They did not want the people, and this answers the person who asked Jason the first question about would the government use this as a ploy, this Planet X thing. Well, the government, in fact, has not used the Planet X story. They have buried the Planet X story. They have murdered people in order to keep the Planet X story concealed until at such time as the disasters occur, and then they will use the disasters to clamp down and have a dictatorship globally. But they don't want it to spring it on the people before their time is right for their purpose.
I think you probably answered my second question. My follow-up was there's amateur astronomers that probably, I suppose, could not view it because they're not in the South Pole. But if they did on the way in, they probably would be shut down somehow or the other.
There are lots of reports and lots of pictures available. Most of them are scooped up as soon as possible. And sometimes it'll bring a fair price. There appears to be an active trade down south in the Australia area, whereby they are taking regular pictures and they are being scooped up. Now, at some point, I do believe, and I believe John will agree, at some point, it may be visible very clearly in the sky. So once you see it, there's not going to be any denying its reality. And that's
it'll
when
be a little
I think,
bit late by then, too, I suppose.
And
thank you so much for your time, gentlemen, and Ms. John Hayes. God bless you.
Well,
bye.
David, you're welcome. Thank you for calling and keep on listening. And I know these gentlemen have given you some great answers, and thanks again for calling. Jason, you were starting to say something when the call came in, and we usually have to get the callers right away, so it's not
sure.
that I mean to interrupt you. But I want you to go ahead and continue that, and then we're going to go to break, and then I'm going to throw some questions at the two of you.
Okay, well, real quick, I want to set down what Planet X is and isn't. Planet X is the acronym, as John said, attributed to almost anything coming at us from space. In this case, this Planet X is, in fact, I believe, wormwood, as described in the Book of Revelation. And it's not all about disaster and the end of life on Earth. It is about the coming change of the age and all the astrophysics involved in our solar system, as you know, entering into a different relationship with the plane of the ecliptic of the Milky Way galaxy. We are coming into a central alignment. See, none of these things are being discussed with the public, are they? Now, you know about them. Your listeners are smart enough to know about them. Imagine how fascinating it would be if Fox picked up a story like this and did their homework to find out that they could have really scooped the entire planet with this story.
All right, gentlemen,
no,
we're going to break, and we got to go to break, and we'll be right back, and we've got more to talk about. Listeners, don't lose us, and go to TalkStream Live. Okay, listeners, we're in the last half hour of the show. It always goes fast, and I think that my all you listeners could agree with that. Jason, I want to give you the opportunity to make the statement you wanted to make. So go right ahead before I start asking you gentlemen some questions.
Oh, it's real easy. It's real simple. Before we jump to any conclusions about whether there is or isn't, what if there is, what should we do, first of all, try to figure out who you are as an individual. Where am I? Who am I? What do I believe in? Where do I live? Why do I live here? Do I live near a major ocean or a big body of water? Okay, if you're a Planet X advocate, it's not a good idea to live near the ocean or any big river or near
and
any
I live
earthquake
near the
zone.
Ocean. I'm on the East Coast near
You see what I'm saying,
ocean
my dear?
City.
You are actually vulnerable. All those, by the way, one quick comment. All those disaster movies you've been seeing for the last 35 or 40 years, has it ever occurred to you that with all the brilliance that went into them and all the knowledge and skills that they taught us about these disasters, it was, in fact, a great learning tool. You see, we've been under conditioning for at least 5, 6, 7 decades ever since.
Well, you
UFO
get the
thing.
Word on that. You know, Jason, I think that the power elite, the people who are really in charge of the world and have the money to do what they want, you're absolutely right. I think they have been conditioning us for many decades to be aware that this Earth is very fragile. And it could very much just fall apart.
So
likewise,
you can't say
I think their whole films that they show on UFOs and on ETs and all of that is also a conditioning. Whether or not that is real or contrived, I can't answer that. I've never had an experience as such. But I think that the people who are in power in the film industry, and trust me, I know this. I'm a screenwriter, and I write books, so I know what's going on behind the scenes. They do create these movies and even TV shows to condition us. They did that with sex. They've done it with just about everything conceivable. They condition us to think a certain way, and we, like, you know, pigs going to slaughter, we believe that stuff.
You know what they call it? They call it reality engineering. Try that one on for size. Try that one.
Yep.
Isn't that a great title, reality engineering? They've learned how to reality engineer our mental, physical, spiritual reality and thus shape the world. That's the
so
real secret.
What you're saying, Jason, and what John is saying is that these people know, according to what you're saying, Planet X is on its way.
Of course.
So,
oh, they have ample.
Guys, don't be so, you know, insane, because you know that the Earth was falling apart.
They have underground cities.
In the very, very beginning of the movie 2012, when you saw that huge alignment coming and you saw the incoming sun to our solar system, I bet very few people caught that. Next time you see 2012 in the opening, watch the little baby sun that's coming in toward the solar system. It's very sneaky, very, very sneaky.
All right, John, you wanted to add to that.
Well, the government indeed knows that it's coming, and they don't intend to tell us. They intend to save themselves. They have underground cities that are just incredible. I'm going to read to you just a brief passage from a great book by Marshall Masters, M-A-S-T-E-R-S. If anybody wants to look for it, it's called Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. But just remember Planet X Forecast. Page 137. According to Phil Schneider, I'm quoting from the book, according to Phil Schneider, incidentally, who was a geologist for the U.S. government, worked on these underground cities. This is my commentary. He was murdered by the government because he was going speaking out to the public and revealing this. According to Phil Schneider, as of December 1995, there were 131 underground bases worldwide. The subterranean variants are known in the black operations community as deep underground military bases, DUMBs, dumps. The submarine versions, which exist beyond the continental shelf, are designated DUM-2 bases. They're submarine bases. Schneider focused his lectures on a subterranean deep underground military base variant and offered the following facts. USA subterranean locations. DUMs, deep underground military bases, are typically located on government-owned land. For example, 9 deep underground military bases are situated under Nellis Air Force Base north of Las Vegas. Average size.
And you know what, John? Most of us know that these underground bases exist. Some have even claimed, and I don't know at all if this is true, but that they have seen UFOs come out of these underground bases. But certainly these bases have better facilities. They are cleaner than those of us living on top. And, in fact, it's a created city of its own everywhere where there are underground bases. And people like the Queen, royalty, and the presidents, they're all going there. And genius scientists, even with a PhD,
right.
I'm not going to make it there. You know,
that's correct. The UFOs you're referring to are actually government-engineered craft. They have mastered that technology, and it's really made by the U.S. government under secret projects.
Mm-hmm.
But these underground bases, the average size and cost, 4.5 cubic miles. That's 4.5 miles one direction times four by 4.5 miles another direction by 4.5 miles vertically. So it's just incredible, the size of these cities, at a cost of $17 to $31 billion each. The largest base size and cost, well, the largest one's located in Sweden. It is 30 cubic miles, and at a cost of $2 trillion, it took 5 years to build and was wholly underwritten by the United Nations. Of course, that's U.S. taxpayer money. Yeah. We're paying for it, but we're gonna be left out in the cold. Range of depths range from 500 feet for the older storage bases to just over 10,500 feet for military installations, which is about almost as deep as the East Rand mine in South Africa. Average depth. During earthquakes, it is safer to be deep underground than on the surface, which is why most deep underground military bases are at a depth of 5,700 feet. This is an optimal depth in terms of survivability without the need to engineer for heat and pressures associated with deeper depths. The types of subterranean deep underground military bases dating back some 40 years are located at the shallowest depths and are primarily used for storage. The newer, deeper deep underground military bases are either fully self-sufficient, multi-level military installations, or prisons.
Prisons. Well, you know, they say there are camps set up for concentration camps set up for all of us. But, you know, gentlemen, we only have a short time, so let me throw some questions at the two of you, okay? And you don't need to give me long extrapolated answers, but just to get an idea. Here we are in 2011. What do you expect us to see from the effects of Planet X? So, John, you go first. Just kind of give me a list of things that you see, and then I'll go to Jason, and then we'll talk about some of those.
Okay. According to the ancients who survived and recorded their experiences, because the reason the ancients have experienced the incursion and the devastation caused by Planet X coming in at a distance is because this planet, this brown dwarf star, is actually on a cometary orbit, and a comet, by definition, comes in at regular predictable time intervals. It's like the pendulum of a grandfather's clock. You can predict the period, the time it takes for that pendulum to swing from one end back to the other, and that's what a comet is, like a celestial pendulum.
Okay, but just tell me what we're going to see, John. I know all these technical things.
Okay, so the ancients, what they saw was, well, I even have quotes from the ancients. They said the sky became dark, so dark that you could not even see the person next to you. That's how, there was no light whatsoever. The winds were so fierce, so strong, that they could not even light a fire. They were living in caves in order to escape this tempest that had arisen. This is what the survivors wrote.
So
it got so hot that they had it was outside. If you were outside the cave, you could be burned to death.
Now, that would be the worst-case scenario, all right?
Yes.
All right, John. Let's put it this way, buddy. Let's turn the saddle around the other way. It's like the kid has got a pony, you know? Half likes it and half doesn't. Let's put the saddle on the other way. Now, I think that we are going to be spared a fair amount of planetary disaster, and I'll tell you why. I would think that if this thing was on a very nasty, nasty path coming in too close to us, that things would have been a lot worse a lot sooner and a lot worse than they are now. I'm not saying they're good now. No, didn't say that. What I'm saying is, where we're at, we might be nearing a place where it might start lessening. However, if these crazy floods keep going on and these snowstorms, it's obvious that the planet is not suffering from either global warming nor global cooling. It's global confusion. Why don't they understand? What affects the sun affects the earth. What affects the sun affects every single other thing under the sun's control. And, of course, what affects the sun affects us. The sun's been, should be nearing its solar maximum period from June, July, going in June, July, August of 11. Instead, it's not acting right. It's been laying low. Solar flares are weird. The sun's magnetic field has just kind of flattened. There's no vibrance. Now, all of a sudden, within this last 6, 8, 9 months, Mother Sun is coming awake. And when it started happening about 8, 9 months ago, so started an increase in the natural disaster patterns and the size and the depth of the earthquakes. Everything is being regulated that's happening to the earth. It has to be based upon what's happening to the sun. Without the sun's influence, There is no Earth. There is no life. There's nothing without the sun.
Okay, let me throw this out now, because this is a question that popped up just now to me.
Did
and again, listeners, in a few minutes we have left,
okay,
you can still call in 1-800-596-8191. Jason and John, we know that certain people are going to be saved by going underground, excuse me, and avoiding the effects of Planet X, the earthquakes, the boiling, the blackness, the tsunamis. We know they're going to go underground and be saved. So what do we commoners do?
Okay, this is what I do. I don't tell other people what to do, but this I would hope they would listen closely to what I do. Each day, in addition to trying to take the material common sense measures of safety, like storing up food and water, and watching out for disasters in my area. More important than all of that, every minute of the day I try to feel the presence of God, our Savior, our Creator, the Lord Jesus. The name Jesus means God is the Savior, and that's what people ought to focus on. He's our Creator, and He's come, He saved us once before from our flawed nature, but He'll come again very soon to save us for if we call out to Him. He promises that throughout the Scripture, so I try to keep my mind focused on the presence of Him. Dear God, our Savior, I know You're with me right now as I carry on my mundane activities. I know that You're with me, and I know that You will implant Your thoughts and Your guiding thoughts in my mind, and this is the character, the nature of my being, that when I pass on to the next life, You will say, I knew You. Don't depart from me because I did know You. You communed with me. And that is what will save me. There's no forces on earth. There's no supplies on earth that's going to save me. Nothing is going to save those underground elite. They'll all be destroyed. The only thing that will save you is your communion with Him. And that's what I do. And I would pray that everyone else does the same.
I'm in total agreement with John's position and John's theology.
So you're a Christian too?
Yes. However, I think there's another dynamic involved here, and that is, I think that there will probably not be an Armageddon, and I'm hoping that there won't be an all-out in Iran thing, because if some major disaster should shake the planet to pieces, you know, going into November or December of 2011, and 2012 comes, and suddenly there you can't launch missiles. You can't set off atomic bombs. An easy way to shut the planet down would be just to shake it a little bit. If you were to lose just one nationwide power grid anywhere in North America, you would shut down North America. You would shut it down. Its overloads would be too great. If you lost something in Europe and you lost Asia and you lost Africa, you are literally walking in the dark. You see how delicately you can shut the planet down if you were God, if you wanted to bring everything to a screaming halt. You just shake the planet. And Planet X seems to be God's motivational tool to possibly shake the planet, just like John said. Like a bowler's spin on a ball.
Okay. Now, let's look at this then. Now, both of you have given us some great input on what you've been saying. But there's two things I want to bring out, and both of you can address this. You know, the Mayans and even the Hopi had said that 2012 would be the end of the age at December 21st. I took it to mean not the end of the world, but rather the end of a cycle, the end of a phase, and that maybe we would enter into a new phase, good or bad, I don't know, maybe a higher technological phase, maybe man created of both robot and flesh. I don't know what it would be, but I didn't really take it as the end of the world. However, I've done also a lot of other research that gives some indication that based on what other people are saying, in correlation to what you and you, Jason, and you, John, are saying, that, look, you know, The Earth is ripe for something catastrophic. And so I want the two of you to address that idea. And if we're in 2011, and we've got at least, what, almost 2 years to go, if you figure all of 2011 and all of 2012, are we going to see these earthquakes and tsunamis occurring in places they never occurred before? And would that be our sign? Are we going to see more birds dropping out of the air?
Well, it's all happening right now. You are seeing catastrophic weather patterns.
Yes,
you
and
are
it will be
already
increasing.
Seeing out of control and natural elements of nature and systems. But everything is all screwed up.
This is only the beginning.
We're in trouble.
This is only the beginning. It will intensify. According to the scriptures, these earthquakes will intensify and become more diverse until we get to the point where the entire Earth is basically almost completely destroyed. Now, I'm not speculating this. I'm getting this right from scriptures, which have proven to be, I've proven to me to be divinely dictated because of their ability to predict the future. For example, God the Savior was able to tell us 2,000 years ago that everyone will take a mark in their right hand, specifically their right hand, not the left, and that's the only means of buying and selling. Well, we see that coming to pass right now. So we can see the divine supernatural power of the ability to predict the future coming from this Bible. Therefore, when it tells you, when God the Savior tells you that this world is going to be so devastated that no flesh would be saved alive, but for the elect's sake, those few days would be cut short. What he's saying is at the very end, he's not saying that the days will be cut short. He's saying that those people who are calling out to him, even if they've been as bad as I have or anybody else has been, if they call out to God with all of their heart for mercy, he will cut short the terror that he's going to bring upon this earth, take us up off of this earth, so our days on earth will be shorter than those who remain to shake their fist at God. And because this world is going to be almost totally destroyed, but we will be taken up, our days will be cut short because we'll be lifted out of there like a helicopter rescue in Vietnam.
Does that sound like something called the rapture?
It will be, but it'll be at the end, not before the tribulation. We're going to go through hell on earth, but we will get out of it, but God will protect us if we turn to him in our hearts and our minds.
Now, where does this whole aspect of UFOs and ETs come in? Because, as I understand,
there's a fallen angels.
Well, now, wait a minute, John. Now, wait. Now, we have a point of debate here. I have, in my lifetime, grown to understand and experience non-malevolent extraterrestrial societies and situations. So you can't say they're all fallen angels. That's not quite fair.
Well, there are angels that protected, saved my life.
Yeah, but
one
who are
time.
We to say?
All I'm saying, John, is,
and I'm not disagreeing with you philosophically, I'm only saying that how do we know quite what angels are supposed to really, really look like? We really don't see them every day.
Well, I don't think that's really irrelevant to the discussion.
Well, what I'm saying
actually,
is people, this whole business, as I understand this end time period coming, there will be large contingents of people taken off the planet, excavated or like you said, you know, taken up in some form of rapture. Now, you just can't bring a human being up into the clouds. Because, of course, they couldn't survive.
Here's what the scripture says.
You're elevated out into a craft of some sort.
Here's what the scripture says is that we don't go up as mass. Our body is changed into energy, essentially. This is what all the scriptures tell us. Mm-hmm. And that in an instant, in the twinkling of an eye, we will be taken up to be with the Lord in the air. So we lose our mass because the soul of the body is the real substance. It doesn't have the mass, but we take on a new body after we are taken up. You know, it's very difficult and metaphysical to talk about these things, but I agree with you. You were saying, how do you know if the angels are good or bad? Well, there are good angels that are loyal, and they protect many of us every single day.
I personally believe I have my own personal guardian angel. I was a former Catholic.
Sure.
I believe
sure,
I have a spiritual presence protecting me at all times.
I agree. So, but I mean, there's no real debate there.
Right.
There are also fallen angels which are, you know, these are Satan and his one-third of all the angels rebelled against God, and they infest this earth now. They're coming to this earth. The scriptures tell us that there will be a great falling away. Well, what is that? A lot of people have misinterpreted that falling away.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there's a falling away of people from the faith, but the falling away is the fallen ones, the cast down angels. Michael and his angels fought in heaven with God, with Satan and his angels, and Michael prevailed, and those angels were cast down to earth. So these are the fallen angels we're talking about. At these end times, we're going to see, God tells us there will be greater and greater iniquity, greater hatred.
Okay,
will
so John, do you think
worse.
The fallen angels, John, are aliens?
Well, you know, it's just the other way around. The ones that pose as aliens are actually fallen angels. This is what the scriptures tell us. These aliens are really not from another planet. They've always been there in another dimension. And it's hard to explain something to the people when it sounds incredible that there is another dimension. But if you read the scriptures, the Lord Jesus himself had the power to walk through walls, that's in the scriptures, and had the power to convert himself, to become invisible. Also, he walked on water. Now, what did he do? He was able to change the mass of his body to something without mass. So, yes, these things do exist scientifically. We can show that these phenomena do exist.
Let's assume this. Let's assume that all the things we've been talking about are givens, and they all prove out. I still think there's even another secret ingredient we don't really realize, and that is the master plan. And where do you as an individual fit into the master's plan? I think not enough of us take the time to try to understand our relationship to the Godhead Spirit. Now, why do I bring this up now? Only because if these times get any more trying than they're already becoming, we best learn how to pray. And we best learn how to communicate with this super galactic power, this Holy Spirit, this hand of God, because frankly, I already been through two earthquakes. One, the 94 Northridge quake, was in a building that came down. I wasn't sure I was going to make it. That was real scary, folks, and it was real for hours. Now, if it's all real, we better wake up. We better understand who we are, where we are, why we are. What would I do if suddenly my world changed through nothing about Obama, nothing about the government, if that big old nasty wind comes through and sucks your town up like just happened in Arkansas a couple of nights ago? You suddenly begin to realize.
Hey, guys,
I
want to thank you both for coming. Hey, wait. We're at the end of the show. I have no control over this. I want to thank you both for coming on. It sounds like we should redo this maybe next week if you two are up to it. And we'll correspond regarding that, and because we really need to talk a little bit more about the effects of Planet X. And so I thank you both. Listeners, I thank you for always supporting me. Good night, everybody. God bless.